On the retail side, you know, we're really trying to suggest that it's a good time to add REITs. If you look at it relative to equities, you have some of the lowest valuations over a long period of time. We have big discounts to net asset value as well, which is a very attractive point historically.
Hello and welcome to the REIT Report. I'm your host, Sarah Borkson-Kito. Joining me today to talk about the role of REITs in real estate allocations is John Votasek, Global Head of Liquid Real Assets at DWS, a global asset manager that's been investing in real estate assets for more than 50 years. John, thanks so much for joining the podcast today.
Oh, my pleasure, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, how would you describe the operating environment for listed REITs at mid-year, and what are you anticipating for the rest of 2023?
I'd say operating environment is diverse. Let's leave office to the side, which clearly has its own challenges. I'd say we're coming into a more normalized level of fundamentals relative to what we had, those extremely healthy levels across many sectors. And so it's decelerating fundamentals in many sectors, but just coming back to more normalized levels. So for example, in residential, we're having a little bit of slowing revenue growth. There is a bit of a pig in the python from the standpoint of supply over the next 4 quarters and potentially 6 quarters, but there are secular tailwinds there that will result in very strong growth coming out of after that supply. And self-storage street rates are a little weak, but I think regional bank weakness should result in much lower supply. Industrial markets, market rents are slowing somewhat, but organic growth is very strong. And then on the retail side, we're seeing some moderating momentum, more due to bankruptcies, but leasing volumes are very high. I'd say two places we're seeing actually accelerating growth that are a bit unique are data centers and senior housing. On data centers, we have some power shortages in some of the markets, which is slowing delivery of assets and helping to push market rental rates. And lastly, on assisted living, sort of getting a double positive. You sort of have accelerating demand growth from a revenue perspective. So coming off low occupancies, gaining occupancies. And they're also benefiting on the expense side as they reduce sort of contract labor overall. So I would say overall healthy operating environment with some sectors slowing, but just slowing to more normalized levels from elevated levels post-COVID.
And some of our listeners might not be aware of DWS. So if you could just give a brief description of the firm and also talk a bit about what the profile is of your typical client and the recommendations you're making to them in terms of using REITs in conjunction with private real estate.
Absolutely. So DWS is a global asset manager with nearly $1 trillion of assets under management. They purchased REIF, which was a dedicated U.S. real estate investor. I was working at REIF at the time in 2002, where we also had a listed real estate portion. So in real estate globally, we manage around $80 billion, of which we are a portion of that. As well on the real asset side, which includes listed infrastructure and natural resource equities and commodities, our team manages about $32 billion, of which, again, the listed real estate is a portion of that. So that's sort of DWS and how we fit in and how our legacy in real estate has resulted in us growing with institutions as well as retail over time. So our balance is pretty equal from a retail and institutional perspective, as well as where we raise the capital. It's probably 60-40 US versus international. So we are sort of touching a lot of the markets. On the retail side, we're really trying to suggest that it's a good time to add REITs. If you look at it relative to equities, you have some of the lowest valuations over a long period of time. We have big discounts to net asset value as well, which is a very attractive point historically. Relative to fixed income, I would say we're more fairly valued. And so really your view of rates is going to dictate where you'd like to be from, whether you think they're cheap or will become cheaper because rates are falling, or you think they're more fairly valued. But again, two out of the three are very inexpensive relative to equities, relative to direct real estate, and then fair relative to fixed income. I think for most institutions, they include listed real estate as about 10% of their weighting to overall real estate. And that's really where policy benchmarks are set by most U.S. institutions. So they are anchored to that a little bit. I think what we've seen, though, internationally and what we've been recommending is if you have tactical opportunities within your real estate allocation, you certainly should be overweighting listed real estate at this time.
Great. And can you talk a little bit about the historic performance of private versus listed real estate?
Absolutely. Obviously, highly contested in some periods. But I mean, by virtue of private real estate being appraisal based, its valuations are typically lagging in nature in both directions, whether it's positive or negative. And therefore, listed real estate has historically led private by around 12 months, effectively. And that's really because within the public markets, whether it's changes in fundamental environment and or capital markets, those prices get discounted immediately within the listed market. If you look at rolling 10-year periods of performance, private and listed are effectively on top of one another over any long period of time. So again, over any rolling 10-year period, you do get dislocations at times. If you look at sort of rolling 1-year or 3-year periods, where again, real estate can trade at a premium or discount, that's typically a good tactical indicator. I think interestingly, it may not play out immediately, meaning oftentimes if REITs are trading at a premium, 2005, 2006, where we were 20% premiums, that performance lasted for an additional 2 or 3 years before obviously we had the financial crisis. You know, contrarily, when you're trading at a big discount, you may not get that resolution very quickly, but typically when you trade at a big premium, the forward 3-year returns relative to private real estate or REITs are very positive on a relative performance. And contrarily, when you're trading at a discount like we are today, the forward 3-year returns versus either Odyssey or NCREIF, which is often used in the institutional for a benchmark, are very attractive. So again, typically they lead private real estate because of that discounting mechanism. Clearly, they lead them now on the downside as rates have risen and there's been a repricing. But as that stabilizes, we'll now see the private market start to be written down. And we think REITs are in a good place to really have more positive returns, that dividend yields are much higher today and growth remains intact.
Do you know the best strategies for decarbonizing the built environment? Are you interested in learning more about using AI in the workplace? Do you know how to effectively align your DEI targets with your business goals? Learn the answers to these questions and much more at NAREIT's REITworks Sustainability Conference, taking place June 28th and 29th in Las Vegas. Join professionals in sustainability, CSR, communications, DEI, finance, and law for 2 days of educational sessions, roundtables, and meaningful networking. Visit go.reit.com/REITworks REIT report to register. That's go.reit.com/REITworks REIT report. And what are some other factors that investors should take into consideration when they're looking at listed REITs versus private real estate?
Outside the obvious, which is liquidity, again, you can get immediate liquidity. We know there are queues to get out of open-end funds today, and that liquidity is not being matched in things like Blackstone's REIT, for example. So we're seeing that in the marketplace. I think more importantly is the ability to invest in emerging asset classes. We've seen this over time in storage, data centers, single family homes, and healthcare. So really gain scale in asset classes like net lease, for example, where again, you may not be able to gain scale on that on a one-off basis, but you can gain scale in the listed markets. I think it's important because listed companies are able to gain access to unsecured debt markets and get better pricing than CMBS or mortgage markets, particularly in these emerging asset classes. I always like to use the example of student housing where, again, unfortunately, all the student housing companies in the U.S. have been privatized, but really the student housing market grew very quickly and became institutionalized in the listed market, at which point then institutional investors started invested to a greater degree. So I think really that opportunity to own and be in these emerging asset classes and take part in the repricing of those asset classes as they become, again, more mature and institutionalized is the best reason really for people to be investing in the listed space.
And where are you seeing some of the most exciting opportunities in the REIT sector today? You talk about these emerging asset classes. Anything in particular that you want to highlight?
I think I'd echo where there's accelerating fundamentals that, you know, I talked about senior living and data centers, which are interesting. I think U.S. apartments, timing may be not quite the optimal time, but I think buying them today, the secular growth around housing, we will have very low supply following 2024. And, you know, effectively you're buying these stocks at 100 basis point higher cap rate than you're getting, again, in the appraisal-based market. So it's one of the biggest spreads we've ever seen. So we think that's attractive. I think the other thing is external growth. A lot of private real estate players, as I mentioned, are getting redemptions and therefore aren't in the market today. And what we've seen is REITs are able to actually externally grow for a very long time. I'll use the example of the Life Storage merger with Extra Space. In total, debt and equity, Life Storage is about a $14 billion platform. you know, this transaction would have come to market 24 months ago. My guess is a private equity firm would have bought that, but instead it became a public-to-public merger. Recently, Ryman Hospitality purchased a large asset in San Antonio from Blackstone for $800 million just last week. Again, a transaction that most likely would have went to a private player. So I think the opportunity for these companies to grow externally is unique relative to where they've had a worse cost of capital than the rest of the private equity players over the last 5 to 10 years. That's sort of getting turned on its head. So I think that's a good opportunity. So those companies with good balance sheets and they could execute externally are really going to be benefiting at this point.
John, is there an optimum mix of REIT property types and geographic diversity that you advocate for your clients?
I'm not sure there's an optimum mix, so to say, from a client perspective. I think there is an opportunity to use them in a discrete fashion to fill portfolio gaps in private portfolios. I mean, the benchmark itself has changed somewhat dramatically over the last 10 years. The U.S. has grown from 55% of the global benchmark for real estate is what I'm speaking to, has grown to 64% of that benchmark over that time period. So again, the underlying benchmark is shifting. You know, U.S. office, which in the late 90s, when I was first investing, with nearly 30% of the benchmark. Now it's 3% of the benchmark. But again, I think where private market participants can execute, and we have some clients doing this, is what we call completion portfolios. And you can complete either by property type. Again, you don't have access to single family homes or small and discrete transactions to get scale there. It's very difficult. So again, doing that by property type or by diversifying by geographic region. So places like Singapore and Japan are closely held, meaning lots of public companies or local investors own those assets, and therefore they transact infrequently. And getting exposure to those in the private market are difficult. So I think getting access from a regional perspective using the listed market is one way to do that. So I don't have an optimum mix. I think it's really, what is your goal overall in your real estate program, and how can you use REITs to make sure that, again, you're getting a full and broad allocation to real estate?
And let's talk a bit about global investment in REITs. To what extent are you advocating investing in REITs abroad?
I mean, to some degree, it is going to depend on the client. But broadly speaking, we encourage people to invest globally. Again, as I mentioned, 65% of the benchmark's U.S., so you're getting a lot of U.S. exposure. I think you have an opportunity to generate greater alpha, so maybe very similar nominal returns, but in active management, the ability to effectively take advantage of a broader and more diverse and less correlated real estate markets is really where you'd be able to do that. I think also an opportunity to participate in the consolidation of the real estate market. If you look at Japanese REITs, they were 3.6% of the benchmark 10 years ago. They're up to 7%. So that was a way to effectively participate in those markets. I think in some of the ex-US markets, there's not as deep as an investment grade or debt pool for individual investors to invest in. Japanese REITs have done that for Japanese investors. I think in Canada, you see the Canadian REITs doing those for individuals as well. So I think, again, we recommend global, generally speaking. You do get a little more office and retail when you go global. But again, the opportunity for an active manager to outperform or find relative value does grow when you do that, and you don't lose a lot of nominal returns.
And John, as you look at the REIT space for the rest of this year, what do you think you'll be monitoring most closely?
I think the last 12 months, we've been focused on balance sheets a lot, notwithstanding sector fundamentals, which we talked about. Those companies that can take advantage of these opportunities and those companies that are not over-leveraged. So there's places like Europe where, again, companies are trading at very high debt to EBITDAs, and they may need to actually de-lever or be forced to de-lever from the rating agencies. Floating rate debt was something we looked at very closely. Now we think we're probably close to the end of the hiking cycle in the U.S., but in most of the rest of the globe, expectations for short rates or Fed, those central banks to raise rates continue to be relatively high. And therefore, again, companies with floating rate debt will be impacted by that. So I think outside of the fundamental piece, which we sort of pointed to where we think there's opportunities, you know, balance sheet are really going to be paramount over the next 12 to 18 months.
Great. John, we've covered lots of topics, but anything else you'd like to add at this point?
I think it's interesting. We are having a lot of very positive discussions with those folks that have private real estate allocations. They see the value. One of the challenges I think they see is, again, they can't execute on lowering their private real estate portfolios. That will happen naturally as private real estate portfolios are written down. That said, those investors that are least sort of benchmark aware, including sovereigns, for example, I think see this as a very good opportunity. And again, where they don't have to pay out benefits over time, but instead are looking for long-term investments, are using this as an opportunity to gain greater exposure to the listed markets.
Great. John, thanks so much for joining the podcast today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And to our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode of the REIT Report, please subscribe or leave a review on your favorite podcast platform.